Hello, everybody. I'm Paul Menzel.
And I'm Jim Conlon, and we're the Old Dogs.
If you've got about 20 minutes, grab a cup of coffee, pull up a chair, and join us.
In this episode, the Old Dogs ramble about some of the things we've come to appreciate that seem to lengthen our lives. We report on a major infestation of peacocks in affluent Houston neighborhoods. Paul tries to stump the older old dog again, with mixed results again. And we offer the New York Times opinion on the 7 keys to longevity. The Old Dog's conversation is the second part of our fascinating chat with Susan Lieberman, whose new book, In the Country of Old, offers a fresh way of approaching the state of being old. Stay with us. Hello there, Paul.
Hello there, Jim.
What bright thing is on your mind today?
Well, in this episode of our podcast, we did a piece about keys to longevity. It was 7 different keys that will help you have a longer and happier life. And you know what? Going through that occurred to me, it doesn't cover everything, does it?
No.
I mean, I have a bunch of ideas myself how to make life more livable.
Am I asking too much to get you to tell me what they are?
Well, I'll share one with you, and I'm sure you can come up with your own.
Okay.
For example, in all the things they talked about, they never once talked about the smell of fresh-baked cookies.
Huh.
My goodness, what a thing to generate positive feelings, right?
Right.
Chocolate chip, I would prefer. Maybe chocolate chip walnut, but seems to me that should have been one of the 7. You got any?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, I'm a musician. And I think that making music, playing my piano, playing my clarinet, I find that this is something that probably extends my life another year every time I sit down.
Also, naps. Naps wasn't on the list. Come on. What could be greater and more refreshing than a nice afternoon nap, I ask you? You got another one?
Yeah, let's see. What else? I had the opportunity to just sit and find a peaceful moment now and then, especially if I have a lovely view to look at and not do anything else.
Okay. Sitting, doing nothing, staring straight ahead. You know, those things can get you institutionalized, Jim. I should warn you. I got another good one, too. Ice cream cones with 2 different flavors of ice cream, one piled on the other.
Okay.
You know, that's
which flavors?
Well, one would have to be a variation on chocolate, and the other would have to be something contrasting, maybe even as simple as vanilla. Obviously, I've thought about this a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
For me, yes, it would be chocolate, but the other flavor would definitely be orange sherbet.
Oh, okay. You would mix sherbet and ice cream?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Aren't there some rules against that?
Not in my world.
Okay. You got something else?
I love reading. I do it every day. And the more I do it, the better I feel. The younger I feel.
I love reading, although I think there should be some laws against books that are over 500 pages long.
Yeah, I'm not tempted to read Moby Dick anymore.
Okay, well, probably most people shouldn't be. And how about this one? The words, "You're right, dear." Nothing promotes happiness in my life more than those precious words.
Really? And why is that? Now, I'm really curious about that.
Why is it? Well, just an affirmation that you're always right.
Yeah. Are you? Yeah. Oh, you mean that somebody told you that?
Yes, yes.
Oh, I can tell you. Take it the other
way. I would say those words? No.
Yes, yes.
We've
got to tell you. If you were to say those words, "You're right, dear," I can guarantee you it would extend your life.
Yeah, there you go. And I tell you one final thought, and I think we agree on this one. Any contact at all with the grandkids, right?
Oh, yeah.
Not to exceed 2 days. Nobody really enjoys a visit to the dentist, but the New York Times recently wrote about the dental visit from hell. The patient was a woman from a suburb of Minneapolis who needed some extensive dental work.
How extensive? Well, she needed 4 root canals, 8 dental crowns, and 20 fillings. Now, in a normal world, that would mean several appointments over a few weeks or months. But the dentist, Dr. Maldron, attempted to do all the work in one visit.
The result was a lawsuit in the amount of $50,000 by the patient, accusing the doctor of negligence and an excessive use of anesthetic to complete the work. I would love to hear the argument about why it had to be done in one day.
Yeah, maybe it was a golf appointment or something. I don't know.
I don't know. But, you know, she consented to it.
Yeah.
I mean, my goodness, if you said yes, you must have known you'd be in that chair for a while.
Yeah, I wonder what kind of anesthetic we're talking about here. Was it Kentucky straight bourbon?
I don't know. But another question is, how do you keep your mouth open that long? My gosh.
According to the Houston Chronicle, Houston has a problem with feral peacocks. The birds are prone to attack pets, cars, windows, and people. In general, they're loud and nasty invaders in one of the city's wealthier neighborhoods.
The peacocks are not native to Texas. They were originally brought to Houston as a feature in the backyard of Vargo's restaurant. While the restaurant was open, the flock was managed and domesticated. But when the restaurant closed in 2012, several birds escaped to nearby neighborhoods.
Without owners to manage the flock, the birds are breeding out of control. Now numbering in the hundreds, they have also become more aggressive toward humans.
One neighborhood, Heathwood, has attracted the birds because of the large yard and nearby woods in this wealthy suburb. Residents have also been feeding the peacocks, which makes the neighborhood a prime nesting area.
While they have been a nuisance, they have not been a big enough problem to call for human intervention like relocating. But as their numbers continue to grow, the problem will need to be addressed in the future.
Oh, I got a sample solution, Jim. Mm-hmm.
Yes?
You import some large predators, like lions, tigers, and bears. Oh, my.
Oh, my. Well, you know, there are a lot more coyotes roaming around the streets and neighborhoods of Houston, and that may take care of the problem.
But they're not doing their job now. Oh, well. For our Stump the Older Old Dog feature in this episode, we turn to the world of acronyms. In our day-to-day lives, we run across acronyms on devices, packaging, and even government agencies. I will name an acronym, and my partner Jim Conlon will attempt to name what it stands for. Are you ready for your embarrassing challenge, Jim?
I'm attempting to be ready.
Okay, we'll start with an easy one.
All right.
The letters UL can be found on many devices. What does it stand for?
You're right, that's a slow pitch. Underwriters Laboratories.
Very good. It's a form of certification. Next, the letters OTIS can be found in an elevator. Now, what does OTIS stand for?
Oh, I didn't know it stood for something. I thought it was a guy named Otis.
Oh, the elevator operator?
Yeah,
Otis?
Yeah,
Otis,
I knew
take
him.
Take me to the 6th floor.
Sorry.
Okay, the answer is Otis Elevator Company. All right, I know it's not really an acronym, but it was something meant to stretch your knowledge, okay?
Okay.
I'm sure you have used a USB port at some time. What does USB stand for?
It stands for Universal Serial Bus.
Excellent. I am shocked that you know that one.
I catch it every day to go home.
If you have used a QR code, you may not know what it stands for. So what does QR stand for?
It stands for Quixotic Refrain.
That is the weirdest, wild-ass guess I've ever heard. The answer is quick response. Okay, we're going to quickly finish off this segment. I present to you 2 acronyms from the wacky world of new technology. The terms are VR and AR. What's your guess?
Virtual reality is the first one. And AR. I think it stands for all right.
Okay, or possibly all wrong, really. AR is augmented reality.
Huh.
They're a little bit different, but they have their own particular term. And your score, sir? I see a 3.5.
3.5.
Yeah, I would say that's probably a C+.
All right, I'll take it.
The New York Times recently published The 7 Keys to Longevity. The tips came from aging experts on how to add more good years to your life.
Here's tip number one. Move more. The number one recommendation is to stay active. You don't have to exercise a lot. The American Heart Association recommends 150 minutes of moderate exercise per week.
Number two, eat more fruits and vegetables. A good model for healthy eating is the Mediterranean diet, which focuses on fresh produce, whole grains, legumes, fish, and olive oil.
Tip number three is get enough sleep. Sleep plays a major role in healthy aging. People who slept less than 5 hours a night had double the risk of developing dementia. 7 to 9 hours is generally recommended.
Tip number four, don't smoke and don't drink much either. Smoking is a well-established health risk, but we are just now understanding the risks of drinking. More than one drink per day for women and 2 drinks per day for men increases the risk of heart disease and 7 types of cancer.
Wow. Tip number five, manage your chronic conditions. Lifestyle interventions may not be enough. Follow your doctor's advice for medications to control chronic conditions.
Tip number six, prioritize your relationships. Isolation and loneliness are as big a detriment to your health as smoking. Relationships are key to not only living healthier, but also happier.
And finally, tip number seven, cultivate a positive mindset. People who scored highly on tests of optimism live 5 to 15% longer. Well, if you gotta pick one healthy practice for longevity, it would be physical activity. If you can't do that, focus on being positive.
Why bother?
In our second conversation with Susan Lieberman, we explore her views on dying with dignity, with her feelings about relevance, and her approach to writing. Susan's latest book, In the Country of Old, offers a unique and refreshing perspective on being old, not as a catastrophe, but as an opportunity to live life differently.
You'd mentioned in one of your pieces that one of your great fears is a decline mentally.
Do you fear that as well?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Do you fear that as
yes,
well?
Yes, I do.
I think that's a common fear. So, so I dealt with this in my earlier book, Death, Dying, and Dessert. And we all come from different places and we have different attitudes about what we think and what we believe is right. I watched my stepfather decline into pretty serious Alzheimer's. It wasn't what happened to him that threw me. It was what it did to my mother as his caretaker. Mm-hmm. And that was horrible. And I've watched other people and I went, this is not for me. I don't wish this for me or for the people who love me, for my children, for my friends, for my partner. I choose not to do this. Other people will not make that choice, but I'm pretty clear about their choice. And in fact, I have very good friends. One of them has Alzheimer's, moving fairly rapidly, and the other has some pretty serious health problems that cannot be corrected. And they are leaving at the end of this month for what I would describe as Swiss finishing school. In Swiss finishing school, you are finished. You don't return. And it's been very interesting to have these conversations over the last 3 months as they move toward this closure. When I describe it to friends, people don't want to talk about it. They just say, and where are you going for dinner tomorrow? Where did you get those sneakers?
So what makes it Swiss? You said Swiss?
Well, there are two organizations in Switzerland, Pegasus, and I've just blocked on the name of the other one, where it's legal to have assisted death. In the states here that have medically assisted end of life, you have to have 2 doctors certify that you have 6 months or less to live. Alzheimer's, for example, will not get you that certification. Some people have chronic depression or other chronic illnesses, that Parkinson's could be one of them. And I'm not advocating this for everybody. I'm just saying this is me. Here's the problem. If you choose that, you often have to go too soon, because if you wait, it becomes too late, especially with Alzheimer's disease. You have to be able to convince people that you are of sound mind and you understand your choices. There comes a point with Alzheimer's disease where your ability to do that is less effective. There's a wonderful book by Amy Bloom called In Love, when she chronicles how she and her husband worked through Dignitas. That's the other organization in Switzerland. Their visit to Dignitas. It's very, very powerful and very poignant.
The idea of saying that you want assisted dying is, I think, something that does require cognitive ability to do it. What I think happens with dementia is that if you are no longer capable of making that decision, you're fine. It's everybody around you that wants that to be over. Right?
Correct.
So then it becomes a problem of the caregivers and the family and all of that to say, this is not for you to decide. This is this person's life, and you have no business saying when it's over.
Well, and every caregiver doesn't feel that way. There are caregivers who don't want it to be over, who don't want to lose the person, no matter what their state of being is. And that's just choice. You know, some people get facelifts and some don't. Some people dress up and some dress down. Some people go and some people stay. But that's a small part of the book. We could talk about my new affection for coffee shops.
Yes.
5 years ago, we moved to a new city. So I didn't know anybody. I didn't belong to any organizations. COVID came. And I've developed this enormous affection for coffee shops. It's not that I like coffee that much. I just like coffee shops. It's a way to be out in the community without having to know anybody.
Yeah, it's become the new village square.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, as we get older, how can I put this delicately? Every couple of hours, I need to find a bathroom. So coffee shops are great for that. I know every good bathroom in this village of La Jolla.
This is kind of a tangent, but I'm known for my tangents. You and your husband, Michael, have had multiple careers through the years, but there's always been this stream of writing. Mm-hmm. Well, now you can devote most of your time to writing, both of you. How do you divide up the house when you want time for writing?
Oh, we each have our studies and they each have doors. So I'm sitting in my study and the door is closed because Michael complains that when I talk on Zoom, I'm too loud. And Michael has a study downstairs and he goes into it. And I don't mind being interrupted. He really doesn't like to be interrupted. And I know that about him. So we each have our space. And this used to be a one-story house and we added on a second story. And the architect said, well, don't you want an open kitchen? Don't you want this room to flow into that? I said, no, we're shut the door people.
So do you share your writing with each other?
After a while. So do you know the Myers-Briggs type indicator stuff about introverts, extroverts?
Yeah.
So extroverts talk to think. I'm an extrovert. I talk to think. Michael's an introvert. Introverts think to talk. He's not ready to talk until he's thunk it through for quite a while. I, on the other hand, put out a half-assed idea here and see how it works and refine it in my head. So I'm more ready to talk than he is. There's one problem with sharing your work. What happens when you don't like the work that someone's sharing with you? Mm-hmm. That's hard.
You have to have ground rules, I think. And very often when you start sharing with somebody, there are no ground rules. If you were to establish a few, you would be able to say, okay, can we agree to be honest but kind?
That is the ground rule, that you have to speak the truth.
Yeah.
But you have to understand that we're different people and we like different things. Mm-hmm. Some of the things Michael writes, I love. Some of the things he writes, I don't love. Sometimes I write something and he goes, it's just way too verbose and fuzzy. And he's right.
Verbose and fussy. I love that. That's a lot of my writing is verbose and fussy.
Well, you know, Paul and I both tend to be extroverts in in that we talk to think, and it comes out in our podcast, I think, quite frequently. But I find that the way to live, you know, you just sort of open your mouth hoping. I had a friend who used to say this, you know, I'm going to talk until an idea shows up.
Ah, that's only for an extrovert. That is not for an introvert.
Right.
Mike is not going to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be shaped and refined and curated before he's willing to put it out there.
Let's spend a moment talking about where you are right now, Susan. At the advanced age of 80, have your attitudes changed at all?
I don't feel relevant in the same way that I did before, when I could make a larger, more visible impact. But I will tell you, I feel wiser. I feel smarter. I feel more tolerant. I feel more respectful. And that's pretty interesting stuff. You just, I don't know, everything softens, doesn't it? Not only is your vision less acute physically, but emotionally it softens a little. Things gray becomes more interesting.
Yeah, you know, that's the way I look at that. Has to do with patience.
Jim, are we more patient or are we more accepting?
Accepting is a good word.
It's a good word, yeah.
You know, I'm struggling with healing from this hip.
Yeah.
I feel very impatient. You know, I don't feel patient. I have no choice, but I'm, what am I? I don't know. I'm less, I don't believe that we're all doing the very best we can, because sometimes I know that I could do better. I really could. I just made an effort. But we're all trying. We're all coping. Life is a challenge. Life is a struggle. And if you don't see it my way, it doesn't mean you're wrong. It just means you don't see it my way.
You know, another aspect of getting older for me is that joys become simpler.
How's that?
Joys become simpler.
Uh-huh.
Joys.
In
a cup
what
of
way?
Coffee and a great uh-huh. view.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not happiness, it's contentment. Happiness is effervescent, I think. Contentment is sort of a substructural way of being that's, I never thought I would have it the way I seem to have it now. I don't know. I don't understand it, really. I'll tell you what I'm working on now is being a better friend, because I so value friendship when it comes to me. When people brought soup those first weeks when I was home, or a friend of mine went to the used bookstore and for $7 bought 7 books and dropped them off, those just seemed huge, you know? It felt so good.
Do something for somebody else.
No, I think when you do it, you're doing it for yourself. It makes you feel so good.
Huh.
I mean, it's nice for the other person, but I'm being kind because I like it. It makes me feel better.
I get it.
Selfish woman that I am. you know, I have made the transition from looking for relevance to looking for pleasures. Does it please me? Do I feel it brings value to my life? So pleasures are not all sitting in the recliner. Sometimes pleasures are work. But if it doesn't please me, I probably shouldn't be spending the few years that I have left spending much time on it. Does that sound incredibly selfish? You know, for so many years, we couldn't do what we wanted. We had to do what our children, our spouses, our bosses, our colleagues wanted. We had to be responsible and grown up and efficient and productive. And that's hard work. It's really hard work. It's also had enormous satisfactions, but I don't have that much energy anymore.
Well, Susan, I can't thank you enough for being able to and willing to share with us. I guess it must give you pleasure or you wouldn't be doing it. And I hope that you have found that it's not a waste of your time to be with us this particular.
No, this is, I mean, when people ask you what you think, it's, and they listen, that's pretty flattering. I mean, they don't know what they're going to say after you leave, but we extroverts like to talk. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk.
Like what you've been hearing? How about sharing the joy with your friends? We can always use more listeners. There are more episodes on the way, so stay tuned and keep howling at the moon.